Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are finishing up Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban with chapters 21 and 22, Hermione's Secret and Owl Post Again. In these chapters, Hermione and Harry try not to rip the fabric of the universe via the fourth dimension.
Yeah. Oh my God. This chapter. Yes.
And Harry finally gets his permission form slip signed.
Aww, so nice. So good for Harry.
So what was it like, you know, finally knowing exactly how everything tied together?
I still feel like I don't fully understand how the time turner works. And I don't know if, I think that was something that, you know, like reflecting on this, I was like, I could use a book, like an instruction manual on how the time turner works, because I had more questions than I had answers when I was reading this, but that's okay. You know, and then I also told myself, don't overthink it. Just enjoy the time turner. But rereading as far as that aspect, how'd you feel about it?
The biggest thing I took away from it was, like, again, the very beginning of the chapter, of how grossed out I am of Snape trying to be the hero.
He is, well, I wrote Snape gets gaslit at one point, but he was really amped to take credit for this whole situation. It's pretty pathetic.
Yeah, because it's, lucky you were there, Snape. Thank you, Minister. Order of Merlin, second class, I'd say. First class, if I can wangle it. Thank you very much indeed, Minister. So sycophantic.
I know. Don't we all know somebody like this, too? Like, I couldn't think of somebody off the top of my head, and it's probably best I shouldn't name any names, but I was just like, ugh, this guy is so gross. I hate all of this, but yeah, he was loving it.
Yeah, so again, we start off where, you know, last chapter, Harry totally blacked out, and he wakes up in the hospital wing and comes to realize that Sirius has been imprisoned somewhere in the castle, and the Dementor is about to perform their kiss any moment now.
Yes, things get very heavy. I mean, I think that's the thing about these chapters in this book, is they never end on like a light note. It's always something really intense is just about to go down. And then does it go down?
And,
apparently,
you know,
it does.
My question to you is, what do you think of Snape in terms of, he's saying that, you know, oh, Sirius Black, like, cast a Confundus charm on them to, like, confuse them, to disorient them. Do you think Snape, again, because Snape was unconscious when the Peter Pettigrew thing was revealed. So he did not see that. But still, do you think it's possible that Snape genuinely believes that, or at least is so blinded by his hate that this is what he truly thinks the facts to be, and he doesn't consider any possibility at all? Or do you think he just doesn't care, and he doesn't care if Sirius may be innocent? He thinks, I still deserve to get Sirius killed for everything he did to me.
I think for some reason, and again, I don't know, I feel like I don't know Snape's true character yet, but what I know of him now, I think he's just, it's just like he can't be wrong. And to me, in this moment especially, he's very much like, what if Malfoy was Snape's age and how would he approach this? But maybe Malfoy had a little bit more, you know, maturity. I think that I really do think that saving face is more important to Severus than it is to, you know, be like, oh, whoops, I was wrong. And
Yeah, I'm just kind of stuck on the fact that, you know, Snape is trying to say that, oh, this must be a Confundus charm. And, you know, I just give more credence to Snape's intelligence to know, like, because he's a very powerful, very, like, his intellectual intelligence is, you know, through the roof, but his emotional intelligence is very low. So yeah. I sort of perceive him, my first impression is to think that he knows what a Confundus charm would look like. And so I would think that he would know that this isn't it.
Yeah, he does seem a little too smart for
that. Or maybe he would under normal circumstances, but he's so emotionally charged by these specific people that it's a genuine blind spot that he has, and he's not thinking about it in terms of I don't care what's right or wrong.
Yeah, my takeaway was I don't like you anymore after this situation. I think you're even more spineless.
After all the buildup of trying to give him a little dimension in this book in terms of the dynamics of him and his father and the buddies.
It wasn't enough for me, apparently. Not yet.
Okay, then. So yeah, we get this whole spiel of, I was so jealous when Madame Pomfrey came in with the chocolate the size of a boulder.
Yes.
And literally started hacking at it with a chisel.
That is, you know, that's the funniest thing. Maybe that's like the most fantastical part for a kid. If like I'm a kid reading this, it's like how every adult just seems to be like shoving chocolate down their throat in this book.
And there is a point where Madame Pomfrey literally shoves the chocolate in his mouth to shut him up.
Hey, I'm sure some people would be absolutely thrilled. But yeah, I'm just trying to get back through where we are. So they're freaking out because they're insistent that because the Dementor's kiss is like impending, they're adamant that you have the wrong person. It's not serious. You know, nobody will listen to them.
Yeah. You see, Minister, confounded both of them. Black's done a very good job on them.
Do you think Black is that powerful of a wizard? I don't know enough about him. To confound somebody.
Confounding actually is not... I don't perceive it from what I know in future books. I don't perceive it to be that powerful. Hmm. It's not so much a question of power. Again, it's more a sense of like diagnostics of Snape should know better, you know, to be able to tell the difference. And I was really struck. So Dumbledore comes in and Dumbledore has come in and he's already listened to Black's side of the story. And Dumbledore is like, I want to speak to Harry and Hermione in private, please. And Snape is just like, this is my perception of Snape at this point. Knows that this is the story is wrong, or he doesn't care at this point because he is so terrified that Dumbledore is giving credence to this tale. And the way Snape is like, you surely don't believe a word of Black's story, Snape whispered, his eyes fixed on Dumbledore's face. I wish to speak to Harry and Hermione alone, Dumbledore repeated. Snape took a step towards Dumbledore. Sirius Black showed he was capable of murder at the age of 16, he breathed. You haven't forgotten that, Headmaster? You haven't forgotten that he once tried to kill me? My memory is as good as it ever was, Severus, said Dumbledore quietly. So this kind of reiterated what I kind of already established in this rereading of the Shrieking Shack is, you know, Snape puts the crux of his victimhood on this prank he played. But again, I go back to my original argument that he took the advice of a guy he knows hates him.
Right. Right. Like,
I think there's some culpability, you know, personal accountability in that. And again, to me, it's like, someone who is like, hit me, hit me, hit me, and you hit them, and it's like, oh, look, they hit me.
100%. Yeah. And I'm just, all know how much I think everybody loves Dumbledore, but I just, now this is a character whose affection grows every time I read about him, but I love the way he handles Snape, because he's not saying like, he's saying like, don't insult me, without being very blunt like I would be and saying, don't insult me. He's just saying, my memory is as good as ever, back off, you know, and I just love him for that. But yeah, Snape, your analogy is exactly right. Somebody just saying, punch me in the face, and then go, oh my God, he punched me. Snape is definitely playing that part in this scene.
Yeah, and I was really struck by, again, where Harry, for the first time, it literally says that, you know, it's shown Dumbledore's, like, weaknesses, like, sociopolitically. Because you think, you know, Dumbledore is considered one of the greatest, if not the greatest, wizard of the 20th century. But even he has limitations in terms of, maybe if he could overpower everyone and let Sirius escape, like, he cannot escape the political system that he lives in. And he's like, you know, people swear that they saw Sirius blow up that street and kill Pettigrew. Like, they're like, Lupin is still running around as a werewolf. He is indisposed and won't be available. Right. And I think he brings up a very good point of holding Sirius accountable for his actions, that, you know, Sirius has not behaved like an innocent man. He ripped up the portrait. He showed up in the dormitory with a knife. You know, this isn't marketable.
Right. Which makes Dumbledore's decision here in the following scenes, I feel a little naive, because he's putting faith into the Golden Trio. Right. And I'm kind of going, like, I didn't quite understand why he's putting his faith there. And I couldn't rationalize it. I mean, you know, sure, adults are not right about everything. And this story is very looking, you know, Harry's writing this to look very favorably upon him and Hermione and Ron. But I'm kind of going, like, What was it that Dumbledore knew or didn't know? Because I kind of got the impression that Dumbledore he only has the information that, like, you know, he said, he kind of relays. So anyway, I don't know.
I think on general principle, Dumbledore is thinking, okay, these kids have gone after the Philosopher's Stone. They fought a basilisk and things like that. Like, in terms of pure, like, danger level, it's dangerous in a different way. It's not straight up, you know, facing something that could kill you, although it kind of was with some of the Dementors. But it was more an evasion thing, which I think was... do you hear my cat meowing?
I just heard her a little, or him a little bit. It's fine. Very, very subtly.
Yeah, okay. And so I think part of it is, you know, kind of training Harry for what is to come in his life in terms of, you know, constantly having this evil dark wizard at his back. But also, I think, again, in terms of having so much faith, I think Dumbledore saw them. I think Dumbledore saw it. And again, knowing that McGonagall gave Hermione the time turn, it's like, oh, okay, they went back in time.
Yes.
And that's but that is following thinking of time in a cyclical fashion and not a linear fashion, that everything that happened absolutely will happen, and there were already vestiges of it, evidence of it happening if you were paying attention, rather than having a totally different timeline that you remember and now it's changed.
Gotcha. Kind of. I think I followed that. Like I said, the time turner and all this is just kind of like
anytime and time travel, like, I'm one of those nerds, like, I think time travel will be possible, but in the very, very distant future, because technically I don't think there's anything that says that you can't, but again, all of those implications, it wouldn't surprise me at all if, like, the FBI or CIA were hiding people from the future.
Man, I just want to sit there and think about that for a while. That's an intense thought.
But
so, yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, so, yeah, you must not be seen. And I think my headcanon, I'm interpreting this, he's emphasizing you must not be seen, because, yeah, that's the whole point of the time turner. But also, I think I saw them. And maybe I saw them because I'm a badass best wizard of the 20th century, and I can notice things other people don't. But still, you better not let anyone else see you.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So they... I mean, I do like the way this scene plays out, because Dumbledore doesn't give them a lot of direction. He's, you know, but he kind of is like, hey, Hermione, I'm winking. You can't see. The, wink, hey, wink, Hermione. Nudge, nudge. Yeah, you got this thing. Let's go figure it out. And that's kind of all the direction he gives, you know. And then he entrusts them to figure the rest out. And therefore, and then they do.
Mm-hmm. And so Hermione turns it like 3 times. And yeah, so the time turner is limited. You can only go back 3 hours into the past. Which again begs the question of, even she was using this for like, yeah, like I don't know how it didn't come up with other students that she was here and people saying she was there. But yeah.
Yeah, I guess these kids aren't gossips. I don't know. I feel like that would...
Or they have other things to gossip about.
Yeah, that...
And just Hermione is not on the radar.
I guess, you know, we've talked about how Hermione doesn't really have a lot of female friends, and she kind of only has Ron and Harry, and, you know, I don't know. It would be interesting to know what her classmates' like perception other than she's just very intelligent. It doesn't mm-hmm. sound like she's got a lot of people, like, you know, hovering over her in her business.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they go and follow themselves down to Hagrid's hut.
Yeah, so I've always been a little, you know, through reading this, a little suspicious or sus, I don't know. I think that's the TikTok word, of the hippogriff, Buckbeak's fate. Mm-hmm. And here we change his fate. Which is very nice.
Yeah, so the fact that the axe swings and just the executioner seemed to have thrown it in frustration at, like, one of the pumpkins or something, that suggests, again, the notion of time being cyclical and, like, they had already saved Buckbeak. They just didn't see it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, this really, I mean, I was kept trying to think of back and forth in the scenes and all of this, maybe it was a lot to think about in the time.
How do you think you would have handled this sort of time travel?
Oh, man, probably not well. I would have probably got distracted or fallen asleep. I could have never had the time turner like Hermione had it, because that was, we will talk about that in a while when she's kind of, well, she kind of gave the rundown of like, it's called the time turner. I got it from McGonagall on our first day back. And my question is like, I just want to ask McGonagall a few questions. Like, why did you do this? Like, that's a lot of pressure to put on a kid. But apparently she thinks Hermione could handle it. She kind of threw out the story. She handled it for the most part, but then it got a little overwhelming. But as far as how the time turner plays out in, you know, this whole scene.
And it wasn't, I don't know. Honestly, it's kind of portrayed that it wasn't even... It didn't even seem to be the stress of the time traveling itself. It was purely just, I'm taking too many classes. If she was just using the time turner to deal with one overlap.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would have been fine. Like, they portrayed it as it's purely about the work, not the fact that she's, like, appearing to, like, stretch herself too thin or doing something physiologically to herself via time travel.
Yeah, and I misspoke. The workload seemed to be like I kind of authorizing this, you know, 3 classes when most students have 1 workload was a lot. I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, Harry is very tempted to just go run in there and get Pettigrew.
Harry has to hold himself back a few times here. In one scene, very kind of poignantly and emotionally, he takes a little bit of a risk, which I get, but I think he's the one who struggles with it. Well, obviously Hermione's pretty skilled in this, and Ron's like conked out, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, shift, because, you know, Philosopher's Stone, we got all 3 of them, you know, together facing the obstacles. Chamber of Secrets, Hermione was out because she got petrified, so it was just Ron and Harry. And then in the 3rd one, now it's now just Harry and Hermione.
It's not a bad combo. I think I'd take Hermione most of the time. But yeah, I should have made one of my quotes when Harry says, "This is the weirdest thing we've ever done." I thought that was pretty funny.
And they've done a lot of weird things up till this point.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. But for some reason, Harry's like, this is a bit much. It was pretty funny to read.
Yeah, and it's just the notion of, like, you know, if you, you know, there have been stories of people killing their past or future selves because they didn't understand.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's, oh my God.
Yeah, so a lot of what they do revolves a lot of waiting. And so they are able to snag Buckbeak. And I'm, again, because I've been around horses and I know the sheer size of horses, like time travel, I feel like I could have, you know, handled doing some sort of sneaky shit time traveling, not with a horse, like trying to hide a full grown horse, like drag it around and not be seen.
That's funny you mentioned that, because I kept thinking about the size of the hippogriff. The other thing that you mentioned is they do a lot of waiting. And when I teach yoga, the last part of my class, like 5 or 10 minutes, is Shavasana, which I sit and meditate. And, you know, the students like meditate or take corpse pose. And that waiting part is really hard sometimes, you know, just I sit there and watch the, you know, I'm like, is this too long? How long have I been here? You know, whatever. So I can't imagine with all this like anticipation of, they know what's to come and they know if they don't do these certain things, you know, I guess I would have a hard time like just sitting there waiting with this giant horse-like creature under the invisibility cloak, but
yeah,
they make it happen.
Yeah, because, and it's so stressful when it's like you have all this time, but you know that you only have a very small window of opportunity and like you can't like go and just get it done. Like it has to be at that specific time. Even without time travel, I hate that.
I hate that too, as a person who's like usually 10 minutes early or, you know, 2 minutes. I have trained myself to be right on time because most of the time I would be 10 to 15 minutes early. So this whole situation would really stress me out.
Yeah, because my worst experience with something like that was I was a TA for a like general history sociology class at my university in Istanbul. And, you know, I had finished grading all of the students, like, tests and stuff. And I, like, literally there were several days before I went on my flight back home to submit the, you know, but they only gave a very small window of opportunity. So I was sitting on these grades for days. And then they decided to tell me, oh, here's the small window where you can open the grades. But I was on an airplane by then.
Oh my
and
so, God.
And I wasn't the only one. So like all of the, everyone, all a whole bunch of other TAs, you know, could not meet that window of opportunity because they told us too late. And then all the students' grades got messed up and the professor and everyone was really pissed. And it's like, you didn't like give us a few days to submit. And then why does it have to be this very small window?
Right. Communicate, people. Communicate. Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, they grabbed Buckbeak, and it was so sad. Buckbeak was trying to go back to Hagrid.
I know. Poor critter. That's what I call him, is a critter. Oh. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Dragon Buckbeak, and basically they're waiting a little bit by the Whomping Willow. And they see Snape go down, see Lupin go down, and then see Snape go down.
Yeah, you kind of, thinking about it, it's got to be weird to kind of know how this is all playing out. And yeah, I'm trying to catch up. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking. So during their waiting, you know, Harry is like, I think I saw my dad. And did you know what was going to happen?
I don't know if I knew specifically, but I knew that the kind of elements, the elements were there to create what ended up happening. Because unlike somebody else, I knew Prongs was a deer, or not a lobster. and I knew that there was some connection to his father. Yeah, so it played out in an interesting way. I didn't really predict it. I thought, you know, I didn't think his dad was alive for a moment. I'm like, mm-hmm. Dad's a goner, but mm-hmm. I thought maybe it would have been his like apparition. Instead, I liked the way it played out. I thought that was really a nice way to do that, that was him on the other side. So, but also for Harry, and you think about the desperation to see your lost parent, like that had to be driving him crazy to just wait for this mm-hmm. to all happen.
Right. And so, let's see. Yeah, so he's talking to Hermione, and then finally they all come, all their past selves come out of the Whomping Willow, and then, the shit hits the fan again.
Yeah, always.
And then they've gotta, make themselves scarce because Lupin, as a werewolf, is starting to head their way.
Yeah, Lupin's really kind of creating quite the situation here. But then, and then they have this is kind of where their time crunch time
Yeah,
comes.
because they're able to evade Lupin, but again, all the Dementors are swarming around Sirius and past Harry, and Harry's just waiting. He's just like, "Oh, come on, Dad, come on,
Right.
come!" And he's not coming. And then he finally puts it together. Oh.
Yes, thankfully. So, I mean, yeah, I thought that was a pretty touching, like pretty moving thing. But I also it was also stressing me out because I think they do that a lot to me in this book, at
Again,
least.
I go back to my question, one of my questions from the Shrieking Shack, or did Snape summon the Dementors, or were the Dementors just so out of control that they sensed panic or craze, fear or whatever, and just swarmed? And then it's like, oh, it's Black. It's actually the guy we wanted anyway.
Right. We talked about if Snape can or can't summon Dementors, right?
Yeah, I.
Okay.
Yeah, we went to the whole discussion of, first of all, how,
Right.
is he physically capable of doing that? And even if he is physically capable, my personal headcanon would be that even if he's physically able to, he does not ha technically have the authority to do so, only Dumbledore. And I think if Snape has the ability, I think Snape would have been willing to defy Dumbledore just to get his personal revenge and beg forgiveness later.
I agree. I agree. He seems pretty slimy to do that.
But yeah, we get our beautiful stag Patronus coming out
Yes.
and warding, because this isn't just like there are like 50 or so, there's a dozens of Dementors swarming around that this stag, beats off.
Right. So he's pretty, like, this Patronus is very powerful. I mean, a very powerful counter to the Dementors, and I forget which memory he like conjures up to get. I think that's in the next chapter. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Yeah, well, he describes is I had the confidence and happiness to do it because I know I did it.
Yes. Okay. So it's the ability that it happened. So Prongs is there, and he saved. I just saved all of our lives. That's what he says. So,
Yay.
yeah, good for you, Harry.
Then basically they run all the way up back into the hospital wing.
They get to the hospital wing, and then
Oh
they
no, I'm
get.
so well, okay. I'm forgetting the part of where they actually go and ride Buckbeak and get serious.
I thought that was coming up. I thought there so we're getting to oh yeah. Sorry. Yes. They have to do that before, but they have to time it very perfectly. I also thought it was I forgot that Harry had to bow to Buckbeak, and I just think that's kind of a cool little thing to image to think about. And just because of reverence to other living things, I thought that was
Yeah.
I
So
appreciated
yeah,
that.
they ride on Buckbeak. So and Sirius is being held in like Flitwick's ca classroom, and Dumbledore, basically his greatest hint was telling them that like the 13th window to the left of whatever. So
Yes.
yeah. So they get Sirius out, and Sirius is like, "You truly are your father's son," and
He's
it's very.
like, yeah, oh, sorry. Yeah, he's trying to have like this moment with Hermione and Harry, and they're like, get out of here. Like, that's fine. Move, you know. I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, it's they give a little more time in the movie with Gary Oldman, and they kind of warp some of Dumbledore's quotes and give them to Sirius in the movie,
No.
which like which Gary Oldman like pulled it off well. The people who we love never truly leave us.
Yeah. Oh.
So yeah, Dumbledore doesn't say that in the movie. Sirius says it, and so then Sirius gets on Buckbeak and flies into the moonlight.
Thank goodness.
Like a badass.
Like a badass on a hippogriff. Beautiful. I'll have to see the movie so I can see what it looks like there. And because Gary Oldman's pretty cool. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was watching a clip of, you know, Gary Oldman with his Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula movie. And like when he's young Dracula, it's like he looks like Johnny Depp.
Yeah, he does. That's right. That's funny.
Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
They did Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah. Wino Forever. I forgot about that. Have you seen that movie, Dracula? Have you watched
it? I've only seen clips of it.
Okay. Me too. And my friends give me hell about it too all the time. They're like, I can't believe you haven't seen it. And I'm like, I've read the book many times. I'm fine. Like, I'll watch it someday.
Right. Yep. And then we finally pick up again in chapter 22, where they are running back to the castle and back to the hospital wing.
Yes. And here they make it. God love them. They encounter Peeves, though, yeah. Right?
Make it just under the wire.
That wouldn't be like a little adventure if that didn't happen. And I think they bump into Dumbledore, who
lets them back in.
Yeah.
And they climb into their beds, and then they hear a commotion outside. And again, your notes, Snape gets gaslighted.
Yes, that's where the
and I was all here for it.
That was on page 420. I wrote gaslighting Snape, and it says that'll. What did you say? Think about what you're saying. They this door has been locked since I left the ward 10 minutes ago. Said Madame Pomfrey. Have these students left their beds? So I love these folks, but yeah, Snape totally gets gaslit here. Which I mean. I don't really love Snape, but also I just think it's funny that Dumbledore is like, dude, what are you thinking? Like, you need to.
Well, he's not lying.
No, he's not lying, but it's funny to think about because I hold Dumbledore in such a place of like
high
there's
esteem.
Just more to the story. Yes, yes, and he's not letting it on. Which I mean, of course he's not, but. Yeah, this would definitely be the little bit of gaslighting of Snape.
Out with it, Potter, he bellowed. What did you do? They helped him escape. I know it. It makes me think of, did you see the first Incredibles?
I haven't. No, okay. I'm sorry.
So, you know, it's about the family with superpowers. And
right.
The little boy, his superpower is like super speed. And so but people don't know that they have superpowers. And so, like, he plays pranks on his teacher, and the teacher, like, realizes, like, Snape, that something is wrong, but cannot prove it. And he's like, coincidence? I think not.
that's funny. Oh, my goodness.
You don't know Potter, shrieked Snape. He did it. I know he did it. And again, like, Snape fluctuates in between wanting to blame Harry, but by blaming Harry, he severely, well, I wouldn't say overestimate, he clearly, for Harry to do some of the things that Snape suggests throughout the books would require a very advanced level of magic, and Snape is always degrading Harry as mediocre.
Yeah, he's kind of conflicted in his judgments there. Snape and Harry's relationship is very interesting to me because, you know, he saves Harry, but then he's complaining about him and it's,
and
the relationship is tense.
Yeah, it was actually earlier in the previous chapter where Snape is like, you know, I don't think it's healthy for, you know, Potter to get all this special treatment. And it's like, it's true. Snape has a point there, but in the same breath, he's saying, I've always tried to treat Potter as any other student. And it's like, no, you don't. You hate his guts.
Yeah, that's bullshit, Snape. Because he definitely treats him poorly. I would say maybe he treats Malfoy like others treat Harry. I don't even know. Snape is being a dick, as usual.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you have it, Severus, said Dumbledore calmly. Unless you are suggesting that Harry and Hermione are able to be in two places at once, I'm afraid I don't see any point in troubling them further.
And there's the gaslighting that I think was there. Like, Dumbledore knows they were in two places at once. But whatever. I mean, it's to save Buckbeak and Sirius Black. So that's fine. I'll let it happen.
Yeah. Again, and I'm totally okay with Snape being gaslighted because, again, I'm operating from the sense that Snape doesn't even care about real justice. This is just trying to kill off his school bully.
Yeah, that's real mature, Mr. Mm-hmm. Snape.
And then they get... So yeah, it's just really uneventful for the rest of the semester. There's even a Hogsmeade visit, but not, like, they're just like, we just traveled through time, we're over Hogsmeade. After yeah. after it was this coveted treat.
Right. Isn't that like the way it goes? And they're just like, oh, we found this other thing. It's pretty wild. I got distracted by something because eventually Lupin is no longer going to be the teacher, right? They get word he's resigned.
Yeah, Hagrid tells them that Snape let it slip that, well, not let it slip, purposefully told the Slytherins as his only sort of outlet for his anger that Sirius Black escaped.
I was laughing about Snape because I'm sure that's the way he would want it to be, like the information to be shared. Like, oh, it just slipped out. No, he's been wanting this. You know, he's been wanting this to happen. The werewolf assignments, and I'm sure Snape is always had it out for Lupin, even though, again, Snape and his, like, kind of two-facedness creating the potion, which we talked about, was kind of like just a flex on his part. He just wanted to be like, this is really difficult.
Well, I think it was Dumbledore ordered him to.
Oh, okay. Okay.
For the safety of everyone involved. At this, because Snape, up until this point, was being very passive-aggressive in trying, say, I didn't tell anyone, but assigning this essay and hoping one of the students will figure it out and start blabbing. So before, he was technically trying to play within the very specific instructions that Dumbledore gave him. But now it's at a point where he's clearly kind of putting two and two together that Dumbledore clearly let this happen, and I'm super pissed, and so therefore I don't care what Dumbledore wanted anymore, and so I'm just gonna tell people myself.
Cool guy, which is a bummer because Lupin seemed to really resonate, I guess, like as far as a teacher, and I guess if you were a person that had the greater good in mind, which we know Snape doesn't, he would have advocated for Lupin to stay and kind of done everything he could to help him because the kids resonated with him. They seemed to be taking a lot away from the class. Ultimately, and for the wizarding world, it would be good for him to be there. But
yeah,
as we've talked about.
But yeah, Lupin is just choosing to resign because he doesn't want to cause any more problems for Dumbledore because people are, you know, going to be writing to him saying, because again, werewolves, like Lupin is a rarity in at least his attempt to try to continue to live within the parameters of wizarding society that they hasn't gone off on the fringes with one of the werewolf packs.
Yeah, because they're a very, we've talked about this too, very shunned part of the wizarding world. There's an extreme prejudice against werewolves in the wizarding world. So the word getting out that they had a werewolf as a teacher and knowingly would be pretty bad news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that we get the explanation of why of prongs as well when mm-hmm. Lupin and Harry are talking.
Yep. And then because Lupin is no longer a teacher, so I don't feel guilty about giving you back this as well. It's no use to me, and I dare say you, Ron, and Hermione will find uses for it, and hands him back the map.
Yeah, the good old Marauder's map. That's pretty... I'm glad they have that, and the invisibility cloak as well.
Mm-hmm.
Too.
Yeah, it's just really sad that Lupin has to go.
It is. I'm hoping he comes back. I have a feeling he'll come back, but I don't know.
Yeah, and then Dumbledore shows up, and it's like, your carriage is ready. And so, yeah, Lupin leaves, very sad. And this little conversation between Harry and Dumbledore, which is like, you know, it didn't make a difference. Pettigrew escaped. And Dumbledore, in his wisdom, it's like, you saved Pettigrew's life. And now Voldemort has a servant that's indebted to his enemy.
That, yeah, you know, that I think I would have had the same reaction as Harry did and felt really guilty. But good on Dumbledore for kind of seeing a different side of it. And just being Dumbledore and just being wiser than any of us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And then Harry goes on to tell Dumbledore about the prophecy that Trelawney, you know, recited. Do you know, Harry, who'd have, like, I think that's the second, like, true prophecy she's done. I should give her a pay raise.
They're talking about, you know, Pettigrew coming back. And then Dumbledore says, hasn't your experience with the Time Turner taught you anything, Harry? The consequences of our actions are always so complicated, so diverse, that predicting the future is a very difficult business indeed. Professor Trelawney, bless her, is living proof of that. You did a very noble thing in saving Pettigrew's life.
Yeah. And then going back to the Patronus and prongs and everything. You think the dead we love ever truly leave us? You think that we don't recall them more clearly than ever in times of great trouble? Your father is alive in you, Harry, and shows himself most plainly when you have need of him. How else could you produce that particular Patronus? Prongs rode again last night. And, I don't know. Like, I guess not purely, like, symbolically, like, the actual pure magical element of that. Does that mean that there is a sense of his dad's spirit in his Patronus, or I don't know.
That's kind of what I took it as, but I mean, my Patronus is a beagle and I've never owned a beagle, so I don't know what that's all about. But yeah, I kind of took it as part of his dad was there, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. End of term, get back on the Hogwarts Express. People are speculating who's going to be the next Defense Against Dark Arts teacher. Maybe a vampire, suggested Dean Thomas hopefully.
This book, they keep dropping these vampire hints, and I'm like, come on. It's like every time I feel like almost every book we could find a mention of a vampire, but not an actual vampire. So anyway, mm-hmm. you know that made me very happy to see that. I think it made us both happy.
Yep. And then let's see. Yeah, for maybe half an hour, a glorious half hour, he had believed he would be living with Sirius from now on, his parents' best friend. It would have been the next best thing to having his own father back.
That's something that I didn't put together, you know, until he's kind of reflecting on it as well, is that he had this, you know, for that moment, he was like, thank God, my summer is not going to be horrible. But then, you know, as he flies away, Sirius flies away, then it's kind of like that hope is dashed. And then I kind of, you know, forgot about the Dursleys. And then I was like, oh God, here we have.
Yeah, and it's even worse for Harry because there was that option and it was snatched away.
I could make a comparison to the world right now about having that little bit of hope, that little bit of tease, and then it's just being kind of backpedaled on. And it almost hurts worse that time. So
mm-hmm. Hermione returns the Time Turner and she decides to drop Muggle studies.
Yeah, that's fine, I guess. We talked about how we really like appreciated her taking Muggle studies, but I guess she could have her own Muggle studies at home, right? Her
parents. Yeah, and again, like I already have bashed Hermione enough that it's not so much about the actual intellectual curiosity. She wanted the bragging rights because she stayed in a class so long, divination that she clearly hated.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then, so Harry meets the Dursleys and it's like, this is a letter from my godfather. You don't have a godfather. Oh, yes, I do. He was my mom and dad's best friend. He's a convicted murderer, but he's broken out of wizard prison and he's on the run. He likes to keep in touch with me, though. Keep up with my news. Check if I'm happy.
Good for... Yeah, because they're on when they were coming back, they get this letter from... I thought I dreamt this. I was like, have I been reading this? And then I was like, no, I actually read it. Because Ron gets a little owl, right?
Oh, yes, the cute little owl. That, yes. Yeah, I don't know where Sirius got him, but yeah, and then we get the final reveal that I gave you the firebolt.
Yes, yes.
Did so, you know that or?
No, I had no idea. It was kind of like, oh, this murderer might have given them. So it was all looked over, but now it makes sense. So I'm glad
and
for that.
And Hermione's like, see, I was right.
It's like, okay, Hermione, you were, but you thought there was much more nefarious intent. So I guess everybody kind of did. And then he gets his Hogsmeade letter, which is nice and very probably intense. I don't know.
Yeah. Bacon's crying again. Like,
aww.
Yeah. It's like, Crookshanks took the order to the owl office for me. I used your name, but told them to take the gold from my own Gringotts vault. Which, again, that sort of transaction, like if, like, you, my bank USDA would be, like, texting me in an instant.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
But I don't know. Maybe it's the, I don't know what the stipulations are. Cause yeah, he is the godson and I don't know how they freeze assets if a guy goes to prison. Cause he's from a very, you know, prominent wizarding family, the Blacks. So they have a shit ton of money in a vault somewhere.
That whole kind of transaction kind of confused me a little bit as at the logistics and things like that. I also think it's really interesting that Harry has this letter from for Hogsmeade with Sirius Black's signature on that, because like you said, the implications, him going to Gringotts and being like, hey, give me some money, like how did that work?
Yeah, I, Sirius Black, Harry Potter's godfather, hereby give him permission to visit Hogsmeade on weekend. So yeah, I'm assuming that like Dumbledore is just keeping this in his office himself. Probably. And not with the yeah. rest of them.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah. And I thought it was very sweet, you know, Ron giving an olive branch to Crookshanks and letting Crookshanks sniff the owl. Is it a real owl?
Yes. Yes. That was, I loved that too, because Crookshanks' intentions, as much as Ron was frustrated with Crookshanks, were always good. So. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that is the end of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
I like that one a lot. I like this one had a little bit more darkness to it. They always do. But I liked it.
Alrighty then. Shall we move to Gothic Geek Out?
Yes. Let us move to Gothic Geek Out. Well, my Gothic element was Harry seeing his dad, or, you know, thinking he's seeing his dad. I feel like that's something in Gothic literature that we, a person from your past, usually a parental figure or, you know, a child or something.
Or an ancestor.
Or an ancestor. Yeah. Just some relation that had a very Gothic feel to it. I liked it. It's a little dark and very Gothic. So.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple, but that was mine.
Okay, just a minute. Let me.
Okay. Do yeah, you're fine. Door. You're fine. Hey, kitty.
You can stay if you're quiet. My Gothic, I kind of was the same thing. The idea of seeing both the potential apparition of Harry's father, but also, I think, the nature, the spiritual nature of the Patronus.
Okay.
And coming off to ward off the evil ghost, which is the Dementors.
Yeah. I didn't even think about it in that way, but that's really interesting.
And then, yeah, I'm just trying to think other Gothic.
Yeah, the Dementor. I mean, I feel like the Gothic elements, we had such a strong Gothic presence with the Dementors and the Shrieking Shack and just things like that. And just some Gothic monsters, I guess we could call Lupin a Gothic monster. But this one wasn't. I don't know if time travel is more seems more sci-fi than it is Gothic.
It's, yeah, it's more speculative fiction. I think I've described before that both Chamber of Secrets and Prisoner of Azkaban are very Gothic, but in very different tenets of Gothic. Chamber of Secrets being the more architectural 18th century old school Gothic, and Prisoner of Azkaban going in more the modern horror sense of Gothic with Lupin, the werewolf, and Dementors and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think we hit all the Gothic elements right now for mm-hmm. these couple chapters.
Alrighty then, and now we can move on to Tarot of the Day. And stop using the expensive Persian rug as your scratching post. This carpet is originally from Isfahan, but I bought it in Baku, Azerbaijan.
Oh, wow.
It was like $300, which was, for the level of detail, you could never get a carpet of this quality in America for that. But,
well, bacon, come on, man.
Yep. And now bacon is on my pagan altar in front of my black mirror.
Just have a good time.
Yep. So, Queen of Wands, let me pull up a little description. The Queen of Wands reminds you that you are upbeat, courageous, and determined. You are here to see through your creative visions and life purpose, even in the face of adversity and challenge. Highly self-actualized and self-aware, you know how to best channel your strengths and weaknesses to achieve your goals. You are optimistic and full of ideas to share with others. You know what you want and how to get it, and are masterful at engaging with others to achieve your goals. Stay fiercely determined and focus on your goals while being friendly and optimistic with those around you.
Well, the Queen of Wands, I mean, I'm trying to think about that. I think Harry in these couple chapters exemplifies that more than Hermione. And I was thinking about the kind of the emotional element, or not the emotional, but the feminine energy of some of these things. I don't know. What's your take? I'm still processing.
Yeah, I thought of Hermione not just purely be feminine, but she's the one who has the most experience with the time turning, and it clicks in her mind from Dumbledore's hints. Like, she's like, okay, we've got a purpose, you know, we've got something to do and we're going to do it. And we're going to not deviate from the, you know, from the target.
Confidence, courageousness. She's got a plan. The wands are usually, I keep thinking of swords. I get swords and wands confused all the time. God.
So wands tend, like, swords are more intellectual. Wands are not emotional. Like, they're in the middle between intellectual and emotional in the sense of housing things that are more creativity-driven.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. That makes sense.
Finally, the Queen of Wands encourages you to get to know your shadow self, the lesser known and sometimes darker side of who you really are. That this doesn't necessarily need to be a negative aspect of yourself, but could be something that most people don't know about you yet. It may be your darker sense of humor, a secret life from your past, or a passion project you've kept hidden away. Well, I think, again, Hermione in showing this element of herself and, like, revealing, this is what I've been doing with my time, my excess amount of time that I create for myself with the time turner.
Yeah. And then the shadow self, I think, just kind of the way to defeat the Dementor. You know, the Dementor shows you what you're afraid of, and that could be kind of a shadowy element as well, and then using the, you know, positivity to defeat that.
He can't make up his mind.
I was gonna say, well, you know, I deal with that with Guava. She's not feeling well, so she's sleeping under my desk.
Well, that's the thing. Most of the time, he will, like, sit quietly, like, under the desk or next to me quietly on the bed. But so
probably
yeah.
an adjustment with you being gone today. I bet.
Oh yeah, it was so hard on the kitties. And now we move on to Rune of the Day, which is known as Angwas. Angwas, keywords, fertility, male procreative force, channeling, energy, completion, and safety. Angwas is the rune of the fertility god Ing, and is associated with masculine sexuality and male potency. This is the springtime energy of plant life emerging after depths of winter, and the procreation of all life on Earth. Depending on the context of the reading, drawing this rune may indicate a healthy and hearty sexual relationship. However, if it can also refer more generally to procreative energy being channeled through specific means, such as a project, a business endeavor, or a journey, whatever is propelling you forward in a positive way, the moment Angwas is acknowledging and confirming that the energy behind it is potent and heading for substantial results. So I'm just thinking of just the fact that, you know, this, you know, the way Sirius Black escapes and, you know, rides off into the moonlight on a hippogriff, that for many in the fandom solidified his status as a badass.
That's pretty badass.
And it's considered, and was always considered by girls like one of the hottest characters in the series.
I get that, Gary Oldman.
Again, even before Gary Oldman's portrayal.
Yeah. Yeah, just kind of that. I get it. I was thinking, like, I was like, how do I make this as PG as I can in my mind? So I was thinking about the time turner as far as, like, kind of serving a purpose, maybe in more of an object that kind of embodied some of that. So I don't know if it fully works, but I like Sirius's, your application of it to Sirius better. But I was like, how do I keep this rated G?
Alternatively, Ingwaz may be signaling that you are reaching your full potential in the matter at hand and that it's time to let go and let the situation play itself out. Which applies to Harry finally realizing, you know, his potential with the Patronus and letting the time, cyclical sense of time, run its course.
Yes. I don't have anything additional, but I'm learning more and more about runes, so that's good.
Indeed. Alrighty then, and then our last exercise is, of course, fan fiction time!
I think I took the easy way. That's maybe what I did. Is what if they didn't have the time turner?
What if they did not have the time turner? Let's see. Well, because they say they're just going to collect the Dementors.
Yes.
So either you gotta knock everyone out.
Yeah.
You gotta knock out Snape. You gotta knock out Fudge. Knock out Pomfrey. And let Dumbledore just, like, open the window.
The Patronus charm, because I know it's powerful, could that only be used against Dementors? Or is there, like, can it be used for other things? Because
it can be used for other things, but other non-violent things. Like, it could not be used to, like, take someone out.
Okay. I guess they can't mesmerize, or what?
They cannot hypnotize, or no, they can't do that.
Okay. All right. So yeah, they would have had to really knock me out.
Yeah, Prongs in his ethereal beauty. You are getting very sleepy.
Being hypnotized by like a sparkly deer is kind of something I would like to have happened in my life. So
if only they had that in Twilight.
Yes. Oh my goodness. What about you? What was your fan? That was pretty much the best I could do because I felt like that would be the most impactful. That would definitely make the kids have to make everybody.
Yeah. What would be really cool is, you know, when you said that, it made me think of what if the time turner could freeze time, just freeze everything and let Harry and Hermione walk about while everything's frozen.
Interesting. So Buckbeak probably wouldn't have been. Buckbeak wouldn't have been around, maybe.
No, what they could have done is, like, yeah, if maybe it's, like, only people touching the time turner can move while everything's frozen. So they just go past everyone, grab Sirius, like, lead him out of the castle and let him transform back in a dog and go back through the passage and just get out.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. That's interesting. And that seems, like, to be among the world, but interesting. What was yours? I'm curious.
What if it really had been his dad?
Man, what if it would have been his dad? Like that he hadn't died, or that
he hadn't died. Let's try that one.
You're just made so. I'm only on book three, and I'm thinking about how radically that changes everything because he doesn't have to live with the Dursleys anymore. That's problem number one solved. That would be Voldemort is obviously. That kind of changes his motivation. It's kind of like unfinished business, it would be.
Yeah, because the thing is, in terms of like the magic is, you know, Dumbledore describes it as your mother died to save you. So if James was still alive and, you know, Lily was still, you know, dead, that wouldn't change like the core nature of Harry's connection to Voldemort.
Yeah. What? Okay. I'm thinking of, so then we have a bunch of questions for James. What have you been doing? How are you, you abandoned your child? You put him with like this abusive family. Like, why the hell did you do that? Like, I can't.
Yeah.
I want to read that fan fiction.
Okay. I'm sure they're out of the 800,000. I'm sure one of them is that.
Oh my God. I didn't realize. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
What if it was just the ghost?
That would be very gothic, first of all. We would hit the goth meter right there.
Because I like the, I like the idea of when, like, people can, like, the ghost can only appear, like, on Halloween or can only show up on the anniversary of the day they died or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I would, yeah, like, I don't know, Harry Potter just in its whole, it's serious, but in the whole whimsical nature of the magical system, you would think that might have existed, but it doesn't.
Yeah, because then it, you know, that would have been kind of cool. Like, what if it could only happen when the prongs, Wormtail, and shoot, I forgot the other one's name.
Lilypad.
Yes, what if they were all together? Like, what if that's the only way? So there would be a little bit of probably less desire to get rid of Peter Pettigrew. It's a cool fan fiction. I like it.
Alrighty then, and thus concludes our readings of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Tune in next week and we'll be going over our wrap-up session of with all our questions about and thoughts and final comments on the Prisoner of Azkaban. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.